living hell.
This is what real hope looks like. This is the word that those hopeless people need to hear. This is the word that 3,000 people that try to commit suicide today, the 3,000 that will try to commit tomorrow, 3,000 that will try to commit on Monday, this is the word that they need to hear, is that there is hope.
It's real superpower. It's hope. There's hope. It needs hope.
Welcome to Victims and Villains. This is the show where we talk nerd, we talk hope, and we speak nothing else. I am your host, Captain Nostalgia, and things are about to get extremely goofy. Please help me in welcoming from the podcast, A Kid Flick, Kid Flicks, who we're crossing over with this week. So if you guys haven't checked out part one, click the link in the description below, but please help me in welcoming their show's host, Mr. Ross Wiseman.
Hey, how's it going? Boy, you sprung up in energy. I was not ready for that.
I always feel like whenever I hit I get that reaction a lot. Whenever we start podcasting, you know, I always like to, you know, make it very energetic. I don't know why.
Yeah. Well, that's where we differ, because mine is like, let me tell a short joke in a very quiet voice, so no one gets spooked. But it's you're going all in on the spooks.
Yeah, I love your intro to the show. So if you guys listened last week when we had the Retro Gamers on, Ross made a little cameo with his telling a little bit about what Kid Flicks is. But I want to start off. So we normally, like, when we start off, we normally have our guests, we get to know you a little bit more section.
Sure.
Where did the theme song come from? Because it is super catchy and, like, but it sounds like it's super cheesy at the same time.
It's very cheesy. So, I don't know. I'm always struggling. Like, that's a hard thing with a podcast theme song, because it's like it's got to represent. And honestly, I was just fiddling around in GarageBand. Like, one of my skills, which I should put on my resume, is that I can make GarageBand not sound bad. So and actually the theme song that you hear, it started off having a rap attached to it. And then when I listened back, it was so embarrassingly terrible that I just cut it out. And the only part that I left was the part where I say, we're not affiliated with Netflix. And it was just like, I don't know, just playing around. Cause GarageBand also has sound effects of kids cheering and booing. And I was like, yeah, this might as well be in there. But yeah.
Yeah, I can attest to that. Like, our theme song that we had originally was random music, and then we had structured music, but it was like this, like, heavy metal breakdowns, and not everybody likes heavy metal.
Yeah, it can be very scary, especially for me.
So I was like, I should probably get something that aligns a little bit more with our show. So we got clips of, you know, people talking about hope, and so we have everything now from X-Files to Men of Steel in our theme song. No copyright intended.
Yeah, it's fine. I think podcast is weird, because there is just kind of like this, just, yeah, there's going to be some copyright stuff, but we don't mean to. Like, it's very much, you can argue fair use for all podcasts.
Yeah, and we give credit. So if you're listening to this magically, Disney and Fox and Warner Brothers, we give you guys full credit.
Yeah, it's okay. Please leave us alone.
Yeah, let the little guy thrive.
Yeah, we're all grassroots.
So tell us a little bit about the concept of Kid Flicks.
Sure. So Kid Flicks, it's every week a comedian or just friend and myself, we sit down and have a freeform conversation about a different piece of kids media. 99% of the time it's movies. We've also done TV shows and trailers, and it's just I love kids media, because, you know, I used to be a kid when I was little, and it's I don't know, when it's good, it's this transcendent piece of media, like Pixar and whatnot. But then when it's bad and pandery and just like a lazy cash grab, like I don't know, the Inspector Gadget movies or the fifth Air Bud movie, it's incredibly bad and fun to look at. So that's kind of where it came from, even though I guess when I started it almost a year ago at this point, it kind of slipped my mind, like, oh, I'm going to have to watch like a feature length children's movie every week, most likely by myself. And that's been a weird new adjustment in my life that is always the spark of Tinder conversations.
But I mean, nowadays, like, you can, I would assume that, like, you'd probably own a lot of these movies. It's probably like iTunes rentals or like Amazon rentals. So,
oh yeah.
Like, no one has to know, you know, just like, what do you do for fun? Watch kids movies.
Yeah. I actually debated setting up like a separate Netflix password or a Netflix profile just so I wouldn't get kids movie recommendations as well. But Netflix really sends them full throttle. Like, they just advertised to me. This morning I was watching just some Frasier while I was having coffee, and they went all out to make sure that I knew that The Boss Baby had a Netflix original series that came out.
Man, The Boss Baby was one of the worst movies I've seen in the last couple of years.
It was terrible, but at the same time, like, I laughed more times than I would like to admit.
I was really sold after seeing the trailer, and like, I had friends that were like, oh, The Boss Baby, it's so good, you gotta see it. And so I was like, all right, I'll see it. And so finally when it hit Netflix, I was like, digging it. And then it got to, like, it progressed a little bit, and I was like, this is a really stupid anticlimactic movie.
There's way too many butt shots of babies for comfort. It's just like, I don't know if I should be watching this. There's like a lot of butts and farts in it.
Maybe Tommy Wiseau was like, you know, just happened to be on it, because if you've seen The Disaster Artist, he's like, I gotta sell my butt, man. I have to do this. I need to sell my butt.
It's like, no, I have to show it.
Yeah. That's exactly. So you have covered a lot of different films over the course of this year. Air Bud Strikes Back, Sky High, Willy Wonka, Big Fat Liar, Captain Underpants, Inspector Gadget, Chicken Run, Labyrinth, Moana. So what has been the lowest point of this podcast for you?
Personally, or in terms of like the movies that we've had to watch?
For you personally.
I think it's hard, because sometimes I'll get, you know, I'm just about to graduate from college, and so I'm very much focused on, getting a job and kind of figuring out the next chapter of my life. And so, and I also have classes and stuff. And so, like, trying to balance all of this stuff, including, like, watching a movie and setting a time aside to, like, meet with somebody and talk about it, is very frustrating. But, I mean, and it's also, and we'll talk about this a little bit later, like, sometimes you get in a mood, or you start to feel a little down or off, and it becomes more of a chore than kind of a fun activity that you do in your free time.
No, I totally can relate to that, because that's what I found myself doing a lot this week. Like, I watched both of these. We're doing a crossover next week for Waco, 20 year anniversary. So, like, I was trying to finish that series at the same time, but, you know, I understand, like, it does, like, if you're not enjoying what you do, it certainly becomes a low point. You're like, here it goes again. But I don't know. There's points to me where, like, I kind of am like, you know, I got to do this. But at the same time, like, I love doing podcasting. I love being able to, like, get on here and go do cons. Like, it's just so energizing.
Well, it's also, and I mean, a big thing with depression is that you need to take that step, and when you're able to, just have a conversation, have an interaction with somebody. And it's like that thing when I'm feeling down, and I'll be like, oh, I don't know why I scheduled this. I really don't want to do this. Once, like, I have that mic in front of me and I'm starting to talk and stuff, I feel a lot better. Like, this has become very much a cathartic thing for me, in addition to just like a fun resume builder.
It is, and I think that's one of the things that, you know, we believe in conversations. But and so you got started doing this about a year ago. Have you ever, like, experimented with podcasting prior to this?
Yes, I you can actually listen to it. My original idea for a podcast that I recorded two episodes of, the one I actually released on Christmas of this past year, and it was Carter Cast. The entire idea was that, every episode, a guest or two and myself, we would talk about a different Aaron Carter song. And when I listened to it, because I was like, okay, my guest fell through for Christmas. I need to release something. And I just found it on my computer and I listened all the way through. And I stand by it, you know, like in the future, because I might want to change up my podcast. And instead of being kids movies, it's just kind of, I don't know, I might change it to something that's a bit more manageable for my timing. But I mean, I was much better researched back in the days of Carter Cast. Like, I was listening to it and I was talking about history of a song, and now I'm just kind of like, oh, I'll skim the Wikipedia page and the IMDb before we record.
So I was listening to the episode that you guys did with the Iron Giant, which is a crossover that you had done with How Many Fingers Am I Holding Up?
Yeah, great podcast. If you haven't listened, it's a fun one.
I have not yet, and I need to check it out. Because I want to hear your thoughts on Mudbound. I thought that was a different take for
you. Yeah, I forgot that I did Mudbound for them.
But I kind of want to. I was like, as I was listening to it, I was like, Aaron Carter, name I haven't heard in forever. So why Aaron Carter as a podcast?
Well, he is such. I mean, he's a 90s staple. Like I really when I was trying to come up with a podcast idea, and I think I still can to this day. Recite every lyric of How I Beat Shaq. Like, I think that was where, like, the seed of the idea came from. And also, I think around the time that I was doing, like, the pre-production, Aaron Carter said that he was supporting Donald Trump in the 2016 election. I was like, that's okay. That's interesting, I guess. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. I guess a part of me, I was trying to figure out, like, what are podcasts about, or like, what should a podcast be? And I'm a big fan of, like, the Gilmore Guys and these podcasts where it's just like, it's a finite thing. They're reviewing, like, every episode of this show, every album by this band, etc. And that was my thought process, that, you know what, I only have to listen to a 3.5 minute song, maybe watch a music video, and just kind of hang out with friends. Like, I think that was a big thing, is a different way to hang out with friends.
I love, and that's one thing I love about podcasting, is like one of my best memories of doing this podcast was just a bro day that we had with Cody Ball, who used to be one of the co-hosts here. It still occasionally pops up, but we went to go to see the Disaster Artist, and then we just came back here and had a conversation and hit record. Like, it was probably one of the most fun episodes we've recorded. Mm-hmm. Like, just being able to do that. But Aaron Carter, man, like, was it like each album was going to be like a season? I don't know why I was so interested by this.
I honestly did not think that far. I was just, because I mean, I like to do, I like to ask my guest what they would like to talk about, just because if they have a personal connection or something with it, it's more interesting than just like, I don't know, what if we talk about this movie this week? And I'm a fan of Aaron Carter as like this very specific cultural touchstone. And I think specificity is always really important to kind of set your podcast aside. Cause you and I, we could just have, oh, they're just a movie review podcast. But instead it's you have this inspirational message of hope and not being alone. And I have this whole conceit of I'm slowly losing my mind while going through trying to understand the plot of B movie.
Yeah, I love that. And it is like when you start podcasting, it's the first thing that I think you really want to ask yourself is, how do I set myself apart? So like when we started, we didn't really have an idea of like what we were doing. We just got together, talked over Skype. The quality of it sounds awful. I highly recommend not listening to the first like 30 episodes.
Yeah, so only the most recent 10 that I've done are worth it. Yeah, I I'm curious because I was planning on doing like a little special something for my 50th episode, but it's going to mean that I have to listen to at least part of every episode that I've done. And those early ones, I definitely was not as good.
Yeah,
it takes time.
It does take time. So like when we the first crossover we ever did was with the Retro Rewind podcast, and we covered the first X-Files film and like stories of like 1998. And you know, when we were prepping for that episode, it was like, well, why do you want to because that episode also we did a panel discussion on the Netflix film Audrey and Daisy, two teenagers that got raped and one killed themselves.
Oh, how was that? I mean, I love like kind of crime documentaries, but that one just seems so visceral.
It's a heavy thing. I watched it once with my wife, like not doing anything, just watching it. And then I went through it a second time to, like actually take notes and like, you know, format the talking points for the panel. And I mean, it's a heavy film, and I was so angry coming out of that film, but it was a turning point for our podcast, because it was, you know, that's where Talk Nerd and Talk Hope came from, because, you know, it was combining those two marriages of, you know, pop culture and suicide prevention and these stigmated, or I guess that's not a word, these taboo topics. Mm-hmm. That's really something we wanted to do. We wanted to tell people, hey, you know, these things aren't as, yes, they're uncomfortable, but they need to be talked about.
Oh yeah. And once the stigma's removed and it becomes less of a thing, like, oh, I don't know if we can talk about it, it becomes less of an issue, because people understand the widespread issue. Like, I mean, the past year and a half or so with the Me Too movement and all this stuff, like the world is realizing and is being frank enough to say and understand how widespread this issue is.
Yeah, and I love that we're progressing forward, you know, ever so slowly. But you know, we need these things we need these conversations to take place, and that's why I feel like, you know, a podcast like this is so needed. Like, you know, not saying that, you know, because it's my podcast, you know, tooting my own horn, but you know, just doing conventions and, you know, doing guest spots on the shows, you can see, you know, just how needed this really is.
Mm-hmm. But, I totally agree.
Yeah, let's talk about an extremely goofy movie.
Yeah. It's so hard to transition between that subject and then the goofy movies.
So we covered a goofy movie, the original one, on Ross's show, Kid Flicks. So go check that out. Again, the links are in the descriptions, as well as a link to his show where you guys can follow him on all of his social media and leave him a 5-star written review on iTunes.
Thank you. I need some more.
As do we. So if you guys are there, you know, just leave one for Kid Flicks, leave one for Victims. But essentially what I'm looking to do right now is let's jump in and talk about this movie. What are your general thoughts on this film, man?
Whew. It was hard. First of all, I watched a goofy movie and an extremely goofy movie back to back, which that's a weird double feature.
Yes, it is.
It was fine. There was a point. I understood the point to a goofy movie, that it's like this father son story, and it's a little convoluted and confusing, but it's there. But an extremely goofy movie, I definitely had a lot more trouble, like, figuring out what I was supposed to take away from it. Like, I guess, just, like, don't cheat, be cool, and be nice to your dad.
So, like, one of my biggest pet peeves about films is, like, if films are based on a series and they have a movie, but then, like, the movie has, like, no ramification on the mythology as a whole, that's, like, one of my biggest pet peeves. And, like, when the Rugrats movie came, you know, introduced the baby brother. Same for the sequel. It introduced, you know, more family for Chucky.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, even X-Files had the, you know, deep in the mythology. Here, a lot of what happens in a Goofy movie, whether it's, you know, you're talking about Roxanne or you're talking about, you know, Powerline, all of these other things, like, they just kind of go out the window. And it's, you know, just embracing this new weird dad disco dynamic. And I don't know, like, I just, a lot of these, like, straight-to-video DVDs are just usually not all that great.
Yeah, and we can also talk about a little bit how this was right after ESPN was acquired by Disney. So the whole plot involves, like, the X Games and prominently features the ESPN logo.
Really? I did not... I knew that ESPN was in this movie. I did not know that Disney owned ESPN.
If I remember correctly, because I was watching this with my friend, and she mentioned that, and I just spouted that off as fact without actually checking it. But, I mean, I'm pretty sure that, at least at this point, it's owned right now by the Walt Disney Company as well as Hearst Communications. I'm not sure exactly when they were bought by Disney, but let me just double check that real quick. It's not showing on Wikipedia. Oh, in 96.
So, like, right after the release of the first one, which, I mean, would make sense. It's like, so essentially, by the time you kind of reach the climax of this film, it's like essentially one big commercial for the X Games at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, you know, like 98, 99, like, that was like the height of skateboarding and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And ska. So, makes sense.
Oh, oh my god, I just, like, blanked out for a second. I was so like, good. Yeah, the X Games. I mean, it's also, I was not, like, a skateboarder. I don't know if you could tell just from my voice, but that was not my speed. Like, I wasn't really an extreme person. I still, to this day, don't know how to ride a bike. And this movie is very much, like, aimed at that hyper 90s of, like, yeah, like, skateboarding's rad, and you can, like, be cool and just kind of zoom around. Like, everybody, like, the coolest kid at the generic state college, he's a skateboarder because he won the college X Games the previous year.
Which, again, yeah. So, like, Bradley Uppercut III is, like, from his name to the way that he carries himself, like, he just doesn't seem like a skater guy.
No, he wears a sweater and a collared shirt while he skates.
I'm like, I grew up and, like, I embrace skating culture, so, like, I grew up, like, skateboarding and, you know, biking and, you know, going to Warped Tour and, like, all these things that, you know, skaters do. And when you skate, it's like, it's jeans and a t-shirt and a pair of Vans. Like, that's what skating is, like, not, like, this, like, super, like, you know, Alfred Pennyworth garb that, you know, you got going on. Like, it doesn't exist.
Yeah, I also thought that the actor that played Bradley Uppercrust III, I thought it was Nathan Fillion for a while when I was watching it. And I think he was just kind of told to kind of do just that generic macho voice.
See, I didn't get Nathan Fillion. He, honestly, whoever, I guess he was just, like, meant to be annoying, because he was really, like, anytime he would open his mouth, it was always like...
Yeah, oh, he was definitely annoying.
he kind of sounded like a more nasally version of Lois from Bob's Burgers. More, just a little bit more macho.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah, this is, like, I guess, because the last, when we were talking about a Goofy movie, we were talking a little bit about, like, high school tropes. This movie, like, has, it's every single weird college trope. Like, I go to Temple University, which is in, Philadelphia, so it's not really a closed campus. It's very much just five city blocks that have academic buildings in them. And so I, like, none of this stuff I could relate to. Just like, oh, here's the block of houses that's owned by the fraternities, or here's that one underground coffee shop that everybody goes to. Like, it's very much just like, oh, we're going to go to 7-Eleven, get a taquito, and then we'll just hop on the subway and go somewhere.
Yeah, and I felt like the random poetry chick, too, that never gets a name, if I remember correctly.
Did she not get a name?
I cannot remember me.
Okay, I'm on the Wikipedia. Just... Her name is just Beret Girl.
Yeah, see?
That's terrible.
I don't know. Like, I felt like she was just such a throwaway character, and, like, I was like, is she going to end up with, you know, Pauly Shore's character? Is she going to end up with PJ? Like, what's going on here? And, like, I don't know. She has a good line in the movie that we're going to talk about a little bit later on in the podcast. But I just, her character really embraced that kind of, like, weird, I don't know, like, I guess that weird, like, cliche that everyone thinks about coffee is that, or college is that everyone loves coffee. No, I've met lots of college kids that don't like coffee.
Yeah, even though I'm not one of them. I'm a big coffee head. You're sipping on a coffee right now, but yeah, but it is, I don't know, it is like that annoying stereotype where it's like, oh my God, like, oh, I need to get another cup of coffee before I go to take this final or whatever. It's just like that, just the very just top level prototypical joke.
Yeah, and I could have done without that. Like, I don't know. Like, there's a lot about this that I hold a lot of nostalgia for the first one. So, like, for this one, I have seen this on Netflix on, like, my recommendations list for, like, upwards of a year. And I just was like, no, it's so bad. It's so bad. It's so bad.
It really is. I don't know. It's just because there's a whole love scene, like, there's a love interest for Goofy, and it makes no sense. Like, not like, oh, Goofy isn't deserving of love, but just he goes to get a library card, which is also weird because you would think that would be just part of tuition, is that you have a library card now.
Right.
But he talks to a librarian. She mentions that she likes the 70s, and he's dressed as, like, John Travolta's character from Saturday Night Fever, and they instantly fall in love, and it's so jarring, and it was a big part of the movie, and, like, I don't know, I'm trying to see what Max is up to, but meanwhile I have to sit through Goofy. You know, how did you feel about Goofy in this movie compared to the first one?
So the first one, Goofy is, like, this, like, great photographer with kids and works at a department store. This one, he's now, like, a factory worker who's, like, miserable, and, you know, now he wants to go back to, so I don't know, like, I didn't really understand his arc throughout this. Like, I understand that, like, parents go through that whole, like, empty nest syndrome thing when, you know, a kid gets married, stuff mm-hmm. like that, but not to this extreme. Like, I felt like the Goofy character in this, he was just so extreme. Like, there was no, like, middle ground. It was embracing, you know, oh, Max is leaving. Max is the only thing. Like, because you see that twice in this. Like, he fails his test because of Max. He loses his job because of Max. Then, you know, he falls in love, and, like, the whole world apparently is, like, you know, now in some Beatles music video. And
oh my God, that was insane. I was losing my mind during that portion.
I couldn't handle Goofy because I had to watch this film in, like, small doses. So, like, I watched, like, 20 minutes one day, came back, watched 20 minutes the next day, and, like, I did that over the course of 4 days because...
That's smart. I should have done that.
I couldn't handle it. Like, there's just so much about this movie I cannot handle.
Yeah, I was, like, trying to keep my... I invited my friend over. I was like, I just watched Goofy movie, and I was like, I need somebody to be here with me while I watch this. Yeah, it's just... In a Goofy movie, Goofy is kind of selfish and clueless. But in this one, he is so selfish and so blind. Like, I get it. In high school, you're still kind of living at home, and he's babying Max, and that kind of makes sense. But in college, it's like Max, he learned from the first movie that Max like loves him, but you know, he's a teenager, and like he needs his space, and Goofy just made it all about him. He struts in 70s gear and sits down next to Max during the lecture, and I don't know, like my parents, like they're parents, they're embarrassing, but they understand kind of how to hold themselves in public. And sure, we're talking about a cartoon character, but still, it's ridiculous. It's goofy as hell that Goofy is this blind to basic decorum and how to treat and deal with his son.
First off, I'm going to say that your friend has to really love you to sit through this movie.
She does.
If someone would be like text me and be like, hey, you want to hang out and watch an extremely goofy movie? I'd be like, oh.
Yeah, it was a Friday afternoon, and this is how she chose to spend it with me.
So kudos to her. Shout out to her. But I am going to say, yeah, like the goofy character in this, like he just seems like so blind. And again, I get that goes back to, you know, I feel like they really tried to make this a standalone film to where they just completely ignored the original film. So like, you know, all the lessons and the journey that these two characters had in a goofy movie, they don't exist for an extremely goofy movie. So you're essentially watching the same thing over again, just different stakes and, you know, different kind of things. But, you know, Max in the end is kind of all like, you know, oh, Dad, I'm so appreciative of you. Like, you know, now give me my space. And I don't know, maybe like Goofy, like the whole like weird love angle. Dude, like the disco scene was just bizarre.
Yeah, I turned to her because there's a, you know, that dance sequence in the middle of it. And I said, how long has this scene been going on? It's insane. And she said, it just started. So there was like a weird tie. You know, we also got into a big fight during the movie. So the scene where Max's X Games team is going against Bradley up across the thirds. X Games team. We got into a big fight because I described the Gamma Mew Mews, their outfits as magenta, and she said that they were red. And we have never had a more at each other's throats conversation because magenta kind of is red, but you cannot deny that those costumes are more, those outfits are more pink and magenta than red. And I would
probably say like they're not quite red, but they're not quite like it's like in between.
Yeah, it's like that. That's when you had an old TV, that would be the one that just kind of warped your TV screen. It'd just be like that's where your TV would just give up.
Yeah, pre 4K days, glorious.
Oh man, those were the good old days.
Yeah, that's and like totally off subject, but like if you guys are we deal with like weird stuff on the show, so like we deal with like both the heavy and the silly. Netflix has a great documentary series right now called Wild Wild Country that has like they'll like show like VHS styled like news reports mm-hmm. of this cult that follows, and like as I'm watching it, like I miss the days of like those weird like lines that you'd get when you pop in a VHS into your VCR.
Yeah, I was lucky enough to have a little bit of VHS action in my early childhood, and like I don't know, there is something nice about it. Just I loved, and I can still hear it in my head, that sound of like the VHS ejecting, and just like that little like force and like the little flap sound as you pushed a VHS in. Guys, we need to bring them back. Bring them back.
They still make them. I mean, well, I guess I can't say that, but like, retro things are starting to become, you know, a thing of the future, maybe.
Yeah.
Seems like we're all about embracing retro culture. Not as quite as goofy in this film, though. Golly, the disco scene is hard to watch. so for. Because we're all about finding the good in things, what is your favorite scene in this movie?
The end credits. No.
You too?
Yeah. what is my favorite scene? I'm like trying to think of just a part in the movie where I was like, oh, that I enjoyed that. I honestly could not tell you a single scene in this movie where I was happy that I had watched that. I guess it was kind of cool, that scene at the random stuff factory where that Goofy worked at. I just like the animation of the like robot arm painting on a chessboard. I thought that was cool.
Yeah. So as I'm watching this, I don't know why. Like, I randomly thought, I was like, why do they wear gloves? Like, that's never addressed in this.
Oh.
And like, as I said that, the next thing out of the Pauly Shore's character mouth is, do you guys ever wonder why we wear gloves?
That was crazy. I've seen that meme before, just float around online, and it was cool to see it in real life. But also, I noticed not every character has gloves. Like, maybe in a Goofy movie, I think they all did, but in this movie, it was a lot more random, it seemed, as to who had gloves. Because Beret Girl, as we've come to know her name, is she? She did not.
And I don't think I have it here. I don't think Roxanne in the first one did either. So it could possibly that the guys wear gloves in this film. I guess they distinguish themselves because curvy bodies and over sexualization is not enough.
They also need to have full view of their hands.
To really distinguish their selves. But I will agree with you. Like, I did like the animation in this. And I feel like even when Disney kind of puts these subpar films out, like the animation quality still kind of translates well. I feel like.
I thought the animation on this one was actually better than the last one, because usually with a direct-to-DVD, even if it is it's still Disney quality, but it's definitely more hastily prepared. I thought the animation on this was a lot smoother.
I would agree there, because I found myself, I own the first one on DVD and I watched the second one on Netflix. I watched them backwards, so I was like, I really enjoyed the animation of the first one, and by the time I got to the second one, I was like, it's really grainy. Like, it definitely has that, 90s theatrical feel to it that I feel like, some of the films at that time, if they're not digitally restored to the level of, Lion King or, Pocahontas or Little Mermaid, they feel very much a product of their time, and the animation just doesn't hold up.
Yeah, I agree with that. But, in terms of animation, this movie gets a great score on that, and probably only on that. I mean, because a great animated sequence, but a sequence that I absolutely loathed, was when they're eating nachos at the club.
Yeah.
And they have cheese all over themselves, and it's like I'm a neat eater, and that was, oh my goodness, it sent shivers down my spine. And then when Beret Girl shows up and she's like, hey, you're covered in cheese or whatever. And everybody loves Max. And
that's a weird turn on, being covered in cheese.
Yeah, you're covered in cheese. That's really cool. Like, no, stop it.
I used to, growing up, and maybe I was the only one, but, I'd get really – I grew up on, this film, and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles is another great example. I would get – when we would get pizza from Pizza Hut or Domino's or Papa John's or even mom and pop shops, I'd get legitimately pissed that the cheese wouldn't run the way it does on these cartoons.
Really? That's that's the worst part. Like we talked about in a Goofy movie, there's a scene where they eat pizza and the cheese is falling off. And also the slice is really floppy. It's I love a crisp slice that has a good amount of cheese, but still it's manageable. It's not overflowing and stuff.
I think that's why I like visiting New York. When we go up to, do stuff up there, I love being able to get pizza up there, because it's that nice balance. Now growing up, I don't like cheese that, you know, is just falling off because, you know, who wants to have sauce and crust? Like, it's just weird. But yeah, I do enjoy the, you know, that nice balance now. And I feel like New York pizza does that perfectly.
Yeah. I mean, I'm also, no, I was about to say, I don't know if I love pizza. I do. I don't know why I was about to say that. Never mind what I was maybe about to say. I don't know why I was about to do that. I was about to just say, pizza's not that good. But no, pizza's amazing. And yeah, New York slices are incredible and large. And like last night at like 1 a.m., I had a slice of just local buffalo chicken pizza. And I mean, it was great.
Oh, man. Buffalo chicken pizza is the best.
It is. Even though this pizza, it was like they had large chunks and just like a couple places on the slice. Like it wasn't just like shredded chicken that was like sprinkled all over, which I didn't appreciate that at all.
Right. All right, so we're moving on to Roads to Hope, and this is a portion of our show where we engage with our guests and talking about conversations of depression and mental health and suicide.
Mm-hmm.
And this is something that we haven't done for a couple of weeks now, but we're getting back to our roots. So there's a scene in this that we had talked about where Goofy's at the factory and Max has just left the nest, so to say, and all he can see is Max. And ultimately he becomes so distracted by his thoughts of Max that he, I guess, what, blows up the factory?
Yeah, he pulls the wrong crank. He's like just not being very attentive at his job, and he just causes like a chain reaction and like a buildup in the conveyor belt.
And this is such a great allegory or great visual representation of what depression does, because depression is distracting, and if it's not talked about, it really has this way of being destructive, you know, to whether it's you internally, your relationships externally. So like, what did you think about this sequence in like regards to like viewing that scene with this like metaphor?
I think it was a relatively good depiction. I mean, I haven't really experienced depression in that sense before, where it is just kind of, I mean, actually, come to think of it, in a way I have. Like, I have just kind of had just the same thought over and over again, and I can't really focus on anything else. But I don't know, I find that, for me at least, kind of having like a menial task or just kind of a repetitive type thing that he was doing, that can kind of help, just because I found that at a lot of websites that I read when I'm feeling down, that doing something physical and kind of creating something with your hands is like a really important aspect of treating depression, just because, you know, you get so internalized, like Goofy was getting in that scene, but then you see something created with your hands that's like on the outside, and you can kind of see it interact in the real world.
It kind of breaks that, brings you back almost to the reality. And I think that sometimes I know that I have a tendency to kind of, when I mess up or like when I am not all the way there, like I have a tendency to focus on that negative aspect. And I was listening to, superhero movie cast last night. They were talking about Spider-Man Homecoming, and Spider-Man, there's if you guys haven't seen, spoiler alert, I don't think it's really a spoiler, but Peter's arc throughout the Homecoming is him really trying to be more than he is instead of focusing on what he can be. And I think that, you know, when you're focusing on what you can be rather than the situation at hand, when you start focalizing on all these things that are, it's about flipping your perspective, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. And yeah, I mean, I felt like that's how depression feels. Depression feels very destructive. And when you just focus on that, like you're talking about, it's very menial, like just, you know, focusing on something else. It's, You know, I always tell people it's about flipping your perspective, focusing on the fact that, you know, you woke up today, focusing on the fact that you woke up in a house, that you have breakfast, that you have clothes on your back. You know, all the little blessings that make up that are often overlooked.
Yeah, I think I definitely think that's important. But it's also, it's one of those things I hear a lot that, like, my friends or my family will say to me, and it's like, it's definitely, it's one thing to recognize those things, but really putting it into practice and actually being an active person, looking at your life and trying to appreciate and understand all these little moving wheels that make you a person and make you worthwhile. Because, I mean, we all are human beings. We are all on this earth. We are all deserving of being on this earth. And when you get in that mindset of, I don't know if I do deserve it, it's so hard to do so, but it's also, it's such an amazing cathartic feeling when you when you're in a slump and you kind of get that little glimmer of something that makes you just kind of put everything back into perspective and remember that these moments, they do pass eventually. And like I can say, when I was watching this movie yesterday, I was in a real slump. Like a bunch of plans had just kind of like canceled on me one after the other, like right when I was finished watching a goofy movie. And I had to take kind of like an hour and a half just to kind of like walk around and eat. And that's partially why my friend came over. I was just like, I can't just like sit here by myself alone and watch this, because I know it's just going to be a miserable time. I'm going to just be just slumped and sitting by myself. And I mean, that's a really important part of depression, is kind of like, her and I are very open and frank about how we do have these kind of really dark thoughts sometimes, and being able to confide and just kind of not try to heal, but just kind of accept the flaws in each other and kind of being a mentor to each other is just a really important thing.
And I think, you know, surrounding yourself with people that get you. I know that, like, the Brandon who I do PS Midnight Cast with, you know, we're constantly talking to each other every day, and like talking about, you know, everything from, you know, God, or talking about, you know, movies or music, or, you know, wrestling. We're just talking about all these things that, you know, yes, that make up our friendship, but at the end of the day, it's also about having that very real relationship, like having people in your life that are gonna call you out on, you know, these, I don't want to say ridiculous, but like, to me, like, I don't know, like, depression is very real, and I guess it depends on the circumstances of the individual, but like having that someone that, like you're talking about, like that, those relationships, that someone that can call you out on those and really kind of, I guess, talk you off the ledge, for lack of a better term, mm-hmm. are super crucial to have, because, you know, those dark places and those dark thoughts in your mind, like Goofy completely levels a factory, you know, being distracted by them. And I think that it can really do the same to you as an individual, that if you don't, you know, reach out or get the help, it can level you and take you to extremely dark places.
Yeah. And you said the word ridiculous. And I think that that's not, you kind of hesitated to use it, but I think, using the word ridiculous is, for me at least, beneficial, because I find that, like, part of depression and like anxious thoughts and paranoia, it's a lot of it is like it comes down to this conspiracy theory type thinking of that, like, everybody is riling against me, like everybody's waiting for me to fail. I think at least once or twice a week that that people would be happier if I was dead. And like, you have to kind of instill that like, no, that's a crazy, ridiculous thing to think. Like, we don't want to use the word crazy, obviously, but I mean, you have to, like, I'm a comedian, and so it's important to really look at situations and find the weird aspect of it, the thing that's off about it. And like, no rational person, like, I've never once thought that, oh, I wish somebody was dead, or I actually meant it. Like, and it's a hard process, but kind of seeing that side of things, that, oh, I am having thoughts that may have like a speck of reality to them, like altogether are pretty much ridiculous and over exaggerated things.
Yeah, and I mean, a lot of the things too that I feel like that we put so much emphasis and value on are just, you know, temporary things. Like Max in this film is, you know, he's kind of almost like sad that, you know, I don't really know what you wouldn't call it, but like he's kind of like in this slump because like he doesn't want to lose this bet that is made with, you know, Bradley Uppercut the Third.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, when you start looking around at, so, you know, he kind of comes to this point where he's like, I quit the team, you know, I'm quitting, I'm going home. And I feel like that is such a you know, a scene that I feel like a lot of people can relate to, because I feel like we don't really know how to fight anymore, or like our lack of wanting to fight is almost non-existent, because it's like, you know, just the circumstances are so bad, but like the circumstances are just a season. Like if you would just reassess your eyes and see that, you know, again, focusing on little things, or like, you know, the menial task, like that season is going to come to a close and another, you know, great one's going to open up for you.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, having that, like these endpoints and kind of check, like setting checkpoints for yourself is a great thing, where it's like, okay, so today I at least have to, like, I mean, it's great right now with college where it's like, okay, I know I at least have to go to class. I have to, write this response paper. I have specific things that I have to do in my day. Like my days partially by design are very busy. Like I have pockets in the, like afternoon when it's still light out where I can kind of relax and watch TV. But like by the time night rolls around, like I'm in meetings or I'm interacting with people to kind of make sure that, cause I it's so easy to have nights where you just kind of wallow and shut yourself down, but kind of instilling and programming in your life, different, points of specific contact to kind of help, I guess, like you were saying, kind of help these moments pass and kind of make sure that they don't rear their ugly heads as much as they usually would.
And I mean, we live in a culture now where, you know, we're in social media age. So like, you know, for even this podcast, like right now is a great example, this crossover, like we've never been in the same room together, but mm-hmm. you know, we live in a world where you know, help is literally just a text message away. Like, even if you know that, oh, hey, I'm feeling these thoughts, but all my friends are asleep. That's why we have, you know, a great thing like the suicide text line, you know, 741-741, and someone is right there to, you know, just talk to you and hear you. And I think that those are such a great and crucial tools that kind of get overlooked. Or, you know, don't get the attention that they deserve. But that is something that I would also suggest, too, is that, you know, we do live in that world. So embrace that side of technology.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I'm trying to think. I don't know if actually I don't think I've ever really called a hotline. I mean, I've been fortunate enough that for the most part, if I'm really feeling down, I do have somebody that I can, like, Snapchat or something. And Snapchat is great because just being able to see somebody's face and kind of making this virtual eye contact is sometimes just like great, because I know that they're listening, that they remember that I'm there, because that's my one of my biggest fears is that I will be forgotten and people will constantly, just once I leave a room, forget that I was even there. And so that's like just a great point of connection. And on the flip side, social media and technology can be very alienating. Like with Snapchat or Instagram, these story features, you can see what everybody else is doing. And I'm sitting in my boxers watching like Scrubs or something. And I'm thinking, okay, so everybody has somebody to go with or to do something. So yeah, I mean, obviously there's good and bad to like any real advancement that tries to connect people.
Yeah, for sure. And I like, you know, that whole topic of social media is being alienating. It's something we've talked about on here a lot of times, and it's just about also embracing conversation. And there's another line in this where Bartista, what was her name? Is it Bartista girl?
A beret girl.
Beret girl. Sorry. I was close. They were both.
Come on.
but she is like, she's introduced as like this poetry snob in the movie. And there's a scene where right after Max quits, she turns to him and she says, "Max, if you admit defeat, defeat admits you into permanent custody." And I felt like that was such a great line to pull out from. And while this film is not the greatest film in the world, I feel like that's a,
you're right.
That's a I feel like that's a truth that, you know, a lot of people can, you know, really embrace, you know, getting knocked down, but never giving up the fight. And always, that's the whole reason we put out the content we do, is that just so you know that, you know, no matter how bad or how much you desire to give up and how defeated you feel, suicide's never the answer, because once defeat gets you in its grasps, it's going to hold you in custody.
Yeah. I mean, like, the bad days are terrible and excruciating, and nobody is denying that, but it's working up the strength to just say, like, there's still tomorrow, like, looking for any kind of upcoming thing that you can look forward to. Like, oh, like for right now, if you're listening to this, you can think like, oh, look, spring is kind of happening now. Like, it's about to be beach weather. Like, who doesn't love the beach? Or who doesn't like the wintertime is so hard because you really have to be kind of inside all the time. But I mean, I love going on walks by myself and just listening to a podcast or listening to like a musical soundtrack or something that will kind of let my thoughts just kind of sync up for a little bit, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And just being in nature, because like we're still animals, and we inherently need like this greenery around us, and to just be in it and connect to our ancestors. And it's such a small thing that you can take 10, 15, 20 minutes. I've taken hour and a half long walks where I'm just listening and just walking around the park by my house. Like, there are so many different things you can do to kind of remember that there is stuff around, that there is still things to be done, to be shared, to be loved, to be thought about.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that, you know, too, that if you mentioned, you know, walks, it's about finding stuff that, you know, works for you, of getting out of that slump. You know, whether it's, you know, watching a movie. I feel like, to me, like, this past week, we did Quiet Place for YouTube. And that movie is such a heavy movie that by the time I got home, I felt like I needed something that would make me laugh. And so, like, if, you know, if I'm in a movies, to me, I love movies. I'm an absolute movie snob. And I feel like if I am, you know, feeling sad, or if I'm feeling depressed, or, you know, and I'm going to do two things. I'm going to pop in a funny movie, and I'm going to pop in, you know, also at the same time, I'm also going to shoot, you know, someone a text, or, you know, say, hey, look, I'm feeling this way, you know, so on and so forth. And, or, you know, I'll conversate with my wife, you know, whatever have you. But it's just about finding the things that really work for you. And, you know, sometimes I'm able to, you know, just sit down and say a prayer, and I'm better. Sometimes, you know, it takes an hour and a half walk. Sometimes it takes a movie. It's really about what works for you. But never alienating yourself so much from someone that, you know, someone can't look and say, I would have never thought that this person was depressed. It's a balance between you finding what works for you, but also that conversating.
Yeah, I mean, and that's something that I'm still working on. Because, I mean, as I said before, I'm a comedian. I perform stand-up. I do improv. I'm very much a joker around. Like, I'm very much – I very thrive when I'm surrounded by people. But then – and I do think I hide it, whether intentional or not, but there is still like a stigma and kind of this notion of just like, okay, like we all get sad sometimes and, just don't worry about it. It'll pass. But, and we were talking about this earlier, just that we do need to talk about it in the open. So it becomes less of an issue, and that way we can talk about it more and be more honest and just accept that this is a part of life and be support systems for each other.
Yeah, and I mean, it's like metaphors and like what depression feels like and suicide, like it's all around us. And you know, I when we first started talking about, you know, doing this crossover, the idea never came up that, you know, I'm going to start analyzing an extremely goofy movie and pull out all of these, you know, depression metaphors. Like, that never happened until I sat down and actually watched this film.
Mm-hmm.
But sorry, you go.
Oh, no. I was just gonna just talk like, yeah, that, like I was definitely surprised by that aspect. Cause I mean, it is like, say what you will about this not good movie, but I mean, that is an emotionally true thing that, it is hard when there's a major life event like that. Like Goofy loses his son to college, and he loses his job. And like, we do very irrational things when we are subject to a lot of change at once. And his decision to go back to school dressed as a 70s man and annoy his son and his friends, like, that's not a great way to deal with it. But in the end, Goofy got his degree and I guess got married to the librarian. I don't really know where we stood with that at the end of the film.
Yeah, I don't know. That was like a weird ending. But I mean, I think it's a, you know, great allegory, and I'm going to try my best. So if you guys are like listening to this and you guys want to see this scene, you guys can either click on Netflix if you guys have Netflix. But I'm also going to try and find this scene on YouTube. I was kind of a little bit ill prepared for that.
Yeah, that's all.
If you guys are listening to this right now and you or someone you know is struggling with suicide, depression, addiction, or self-harm, we encourage you guys to reach out. Like, we've been spending the last few minutes talking about depression and just how it destroys you and internally if you're not having those conversations. And so we encourage you guys to have conversations. You guys can check out our social media, Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter, or even victimsandvillains.net. Just reach out and start a conversation with us. We would love to get to know you guys. That's the reason why we do this show, is so that you guys can know that there is a thing as hope and that you are not alone. But speaking of social media, where can people find you?
Oh, lovely. Well, you can find KidFlix, the podcast that I produce, at KidFlixPod, KIDFLIX pod, on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. You can also find my personal Twitter and Instagram at Mr. Wiseman, all spelled out. And yeah, that's I also have a portfolio website, which is MrWiseman.com. So if you want to hire me, do it.
All right, and one other thing that I'm going to leave you guys with, if you guys are struggling, call the Suicide Lifeline as well. There's 1-800-273-8255, or also you guys can text anonymously to 741-741. But one more thing I have to say about this movie, I was just thinking about this, is the cover art for this is both dad and son at a disco. Did you think that was weird?
Yeah, I would not go to a disco with my dad. The most we've ever done is we went to a Fleetwood Mac concert once, and it was great, but there was no dancing involved, so that was good.
Yeah. All right, so if you guys are listening to this right now, what is your favorite or most embarrassing memory with your parents? Tweet to us at Victims and Villains or write to us on Facebook. You guys can also leave a comment below on this post. And until next time, remember, keep talking, nerd, talking hope, and speaking nothing else. We'll see you guys next time.
Bye-bye.